A principle established by St. Paul is that the church is, to use the technical phrase, charismatically ordered. That means the church is ordered by the gifts that people have. Charisma is the Greek word for gift. So people are ordered, the church is ordered by the gifts of the various people of God. That is a principle that we have. And so people have, as we all know in our own parish here, various gifts to do various things. We have folks who are gifted at flower arranging, who do beautiful offerings of flowers for us, and folks who are good at reading and leading and all kinds of other things. And there is something, I think, profoundly valuable about this idea of the Christian community being charismatically ordered, or ordered by the gifts the people have. Because you can't be ordered by gifts without being all about communion. In the communion of the faithful, we help each other out. We complement each other's gifts and skills. We help each other to learn and to grow. And in that way, we reflect the divine life of the Trinity, which is the perfect communion of persons. So perfect that these three are one. And so having a charismatically ordered community like the church is helps us reflect the divine life of Trinity, the Trinity in the world. And we realize that we imperfectly, we have to learn to use our gifts and recognize our gifts and develop our gifts. You know, I love the story of Samuel and Eli, because Eli helps Samuel learn how to recognize the voice of God and respond to it. So in the story, we have this marvelous little bit of teaching, and it's wonderful. So, Samuel keeps trying to respond to Eli. So one of Samuel's gifts is responsiveness to voices that call him. And we see that already early in his life. And he keeps going to Eli saying, "Here I am, you called me, what'd you want?" You know. And Eli's like, "Go to bed, I didn't call you." And finally Eli realizes, oh, wait a minute, something's up here, right? And says to him, "All right, here's what you do when you hear that voice." And so he builds on Samuel's basic gift and helps him refine it and learn how to use his willingness to respond to the voices that call him, and to learn how to use that to develop his ability to respond to God's voice as God calls him. So he really helps him live into his gifts. And that's part of the point of a charismatically ordered community. We help each other identify our gifts and live into them. And that's why Jesus in the gospel talks about praying for laborers to go out into the field and harvest. What are they harvesting? They're harvesting the gifts of the people and the people's ability to be responsive to the Spirit in their life. Why is it a harvest? Because the seeds of the kingdom are scattered broadcast throughout the whole creation. Laborers going into harvest are going into harvest the Spirit, and therefore the gifts of the people of God, and helping people realize ultimately that all people are the people of God. Proclus is an interesting example of this. Here's a guy who, as a child, was really interested in the stories in the Bible. He thought Bible stories were really cool. I agree with him. And he developed in his early life an interest in prayer. And what happened is the church saw his gifts, and like Samuel and Eli, the church helped him develop those gifts. And so he became a student of St. John Chrysostom. And ultimately, Chrysostom ordained him a deacon and then a priest as he developed and lived into his gifts. And he lived into those gifts of leadership. And you know, we talk about living into our gifts, and it sounds wonderful, but sometimes it's a challenge, too. Sometimes our gifts really call us to grow and stretch in ways that don't necessarily make us comfortable. So Proclus is ultimately made a bishop, and he goes to the community that he's been put in charge of, and he gets driven out. He gets driven out by Nestorians, people who didn't believe that the Word of God was Christ was the Word of God eternally. In other words, they messed up the fully God and fully human formula. And so that messes up the connection that we have with God. Right? So it's kind of an important point. And so he gets kicked out of town. So he goes back to Constantinople and he helps out as a bishop, sort of an assisting bishop in Constantinople. And he helps out there. And what happens is Nestorius, the heretic, becomes for a time, I always forget this until I go back and look at my history. For a time, Nestorius, the heretic, is made the archbishop of Constantinople. So Nestorius is technically Proclus's boss. And Proclus preaches a very public sermon in which he disagrees with Nestorius. And what's interesting is Nestorius didn't kick him out. It's very interesting that that happened that way. But he was responding to his gifts, which is to shepherd and lead the people in the right path. Really interesting. Ultimately, he becomes the patriarch, the archbishop and patriarch of Constantinople himself. And when Proclus is serving as patriarch, there is across the land a whole series of really bad earthquakes. And this is actually in the historical record, so we know that this really happened. There were these severe earthquakes across the region. And Proclus, he's like, he does exactly the whole point of his life. He says to himself, I think, I imagine it this way. He says to himself, what are the gifts that we as the people of God bring to this crisis? Will we bring intercession as a gift? So he gets the emperor, no small feat, getting the emperor's attention and commitment. He gets the emperor to join him and the people of the city, and they go outside the city because the earthquakes are affecting more than Constantinople. So he calls the people to a greater concern than just themselves. And he takes them outside the city, and they pray for relief from the earthquakes and care for the people who are affected. Because one of the community's gifts is intercessory prayer. So he builds on that. He calls them out, and they engage in a series of prayer services outside the city so they can pray clearly for the whole region. It's lovely. Now, here's the fun part, right? A story has emerged over time. I don't, you know, it's one of those stories that historians are all nervous about because it's a miracle story. But it reinforces the point. And the story is that during one of these prayer services, everyone's praying, and a young person, remember Proclus was into prayer when he was a young person too, right? A young person gets lifted up into the heavens, and then he gets brought back down. And he tells the people, they ask him what happened. He tells them, he heard the angels singing, "Holy God, holy and mighty, holy immortal one." And since they're praying about the earthquakes and the danger and the effects of those earthquakes, they decide to make that their prayer and add, "Have mercy upon us." Holy God, holy and mighty, holy immortal one, have mercy upon us. Which then becomes the story of the origin of the Trisagion, which we are singing on Sundays in Advent. Right? Fun story. What I like about that story, forget whether or not it's historical. You know, remember, my point is all these stories are true. Some of them actually happened. What's true about this story is that when we act on our gifts in the charismatically ordered community, God gives us more gifts and gives us what we need to face the challenges before us. And so the people are building on their gift of intercessory prayer, and then this miracle story comes along where God gives them a new prayer to say. So the idea, again, is building on those gifts. We get more gifts even as we face greater challenges. All of this, I believe, is the implication, the unfolding of the implication of the fact that we are a community ordered by gifts. The church is charismatically ordered. And so the challenge for us as members of the church is to think about our own gifts and how we use them.